You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, my name is Vaughn Armstrong. I've played more characters in the Star Trek universe than anybody, and I was Admiral Forrest. You are listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as always, is...
Tristan Riddell.
And I am very excited about this particular episode of To the Journey. No, it's not either of our birthdays. It's not a holiday. But we have something very exciting going on. And that is an interview with our guest today, Vaughn Armstrong. It's very awesome to have you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, pleased as punch to do it. You guys seem like really together people. And this technology thing is...
It's a little crazy.
It's superb. It's kind of what Star Trek's all about, right?
Indeed. We are living some of this future. Yes. So you are among a very particular group of Star Trek guest actors because you have been in four separate series. You were on TNG, DS9, Voyager, as well as a semi-regular character on Enterprise. And that puts you to a status that's like with Jeffrey Combs and J.G. Hertzler, very big names.
I got them beat, though. I've done more characters than anybody, which is nice. You know, I'm kind of proud of it. 12 all together, and they were all pretty good, you know, nice guest roles. Those guys are friends of mine, Jeff and J.G. We travel a lot to these conventions together and things, and we have a good time, and we get a kick out of the special little club we're in.
Now, Vaughn, you like as you mentioned conventions, and you're very active with your convention appearances. I actually saw you a couple years ago in the Chicagoland area near O'Hare, and it was so great to see you on stage because of all the camaraderie that I could tell you had with other Star Trek actors. Do you feel like because you are of this convention fraternity that you've been able to make friendships with other Star Trek actors?
Yeah, we travel a couple of different groups, and I travel together. I have my band, which is the Enterprise Blues Band. It's playing soon on December 19th at the Altadena Coffee Gallery. It's kind of a reputed place for musicians, and we're playing there at 7 in the evening. But then there's the Rat Pack. The band is Casey Biggs. He and Steve Rankin, who's done four or five different roles on the show, are in my band. And other guys are also, you know, we try to include them whenever we can. But we're, at the moment, this seems to be the traveling trio here.
Gotcha.
And then we do the Rat Pack, which is also a bunch of camaraderie. The Star Trek Rat Pack, which includes myself, Jeffrey Combs, Max Grudenchik wrote most of the songs, and Casey Biggs, again, as well, Armin Shimerman, and Bill Bruchel, our keyboard player. We've all known each other now for most of those guys I've known from the theater at some point. 20, 30 years ago.
How did it all get started? How did Rat Pack get started? Did you guys were just like hanging around and you're like, oh, hey, I play this instrument. I can write songs. I can sing. How'd that get going?
Actually, we were all kind of doing our own thing. You know, I kind of performed individually as well as with my band here and there. And my friend Casey's a great musician. And Lolita Faggio is... our agent for these conventions. And she just kind of got together and said, you guys are all so talented. And we all said, oh, pshaw. But she said, why don't we, you know, do this thing for a closing event instead of just the auction and it's over, you know, have an up thing. And so she asked us all if we wanted to do it. Max wrote all these great songs Star Trek related funny things, you know. My favorite is when I was Admiral Forrest, not Captain, not Ensign, not Chief.
Well, you guys are such a hoot.
And so she said, she asked us all if we wanted to do it, and the convention guys wanted to do it, and so we've been doing it, you know.
Right on.
Traveling all over the country. It's great.
Now, did you get started doing conventions with the band, or did that come later after doing some conventions, just guest appearances?
First convention, it was in England. Okay. And they told me I'd have to do a panel, which I thought meant maybe six actors, three to six actors talking in front of 60 people. Mm-hmm. And I get there, I hear the music from the show, you know, now here's a guy that's done more different characters than anybody else, Mr. Von Ottman. And I walk out and there are 3,000 people. And there's a huge screen of my face behind me. You know, they've got a big close up and I'm dripping with fear.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't know what to say to these folks, you know, and my knees start going. You know, since then, I've understood how to talk and listen and all of that. But I didn't see anybody asking me anything. So I just pulled out my harmonica and said, you guys mind if I play this? So I started playing that, and it was a big hit. And then Bob Carter came out after me, and he's singing these songs and having a great time. And I thought, well, that's it. My sister-in-law just gave me a ukulele. I'm going to write some songs. So I wrote some songs. And then I asked Casey if he wanted to be in the band. We've been to England and to Germany together several different times, and kind of all over the country. We're playing in this big cruise coming up in January 2017.
Oh, that's right. The Star Trek cruise. I'm so jealous of that.
Oh, yeah. It's sold out, too. Yeah, they're having my band with Casey and Steve and myself, and we're part of the entertainment, and James Darren.
Oh, yeah.
Spent some time with, because he's a couple of times. He joined us in the Rat Pack, and in Germany, he was the other act when we were the band. You know, we did Friday, he did Saturday. Uh-huh. It's really very much a camaraderie.
You talked about, you thankfully reminded us that you've done more characters than anybody else in the show. And you've been, I'm looking at all the many faces of you, and you've done Klingons, you've done Cardassians and Romulans and the whole food chain. You know, you've played a lot of aliens of the week. Or a lot of one-off characters. Now, do you have a favorite? You know, is there somebody that sticks out in your brain where you're just like, man, that was a lot of fun being that person or being that character?
Well, I got to tell you, it's always fun to get that call. And when they say, Vaughn, do you want to do this? And that is immediately my favorite one, the one that they're asking me for at the moment. But, you know, I've had a lot of sort of classic opportunities for an actor. That first Klingon, I got to tell you, was, you know, I was a Vietnam vet. I'd been in town for a while, but the roles I were getting weren't that much fun. And here was this warrior, you know, and I had a lot of classical experience. Those were a lot of fun. So, I mean, I just threw it all in for this audition. And I'd auditioned for them before for the role of Riker.
Oh, you did?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Ah.
You know, they didn't seem interested. They seen me several times, but Junie Lowry and Elisa Goodman, the casting people of that show at the time, brought me in anyway. They were going, you know, we've seen Vaughn. Let's not have him this time. But they did anyway. And they were kind of wowed. And then I got two or three more. Then they just started calling me. That first Klingon was a lot of fun. But then again, the Romulan, Telek Ramor, I don't know if you remember that character.
Oh, played. Absolutely. That's one of my favorite episodes of Voyager.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But yes.
They wrote three little novels surrounding that character, I guess. He was a lot of fun because, you know, he kind of of a bad guy race, but or at least an enemy, and but we found a connection in the love of our children. You know, we each wanted to get home to where our children were, and that kind of brought us together, and that was really nice to play.
Yeah.
And I got to beam up for the first time, which
you did. Yeah, that's one thing I really love about that episode is that Janeway made a connection with that Romulan on an emotional level.
Yeah, but also that Borg, the Two of Nine, Seven's older brother, was so much fun. Survival Instinct was the name of that episode, and that was on Voyager. That was a good episode. And, you know, I could go on, because each one of them, it takes a special kind of preparation, you know. You have to seek out, like, physically, when I'm sitting in the makeup chair, I'm looking at it going, well, what in their beings made them evolve into this creature? With the Cardassians, you know, these huge necks, it's like they've been so uptight in this Nazi stance for so long that they've just grown into this grotesque neck-like creature. And then the Klingons, I kept kind of realizing that as a kid growing up as a Klingon, you're out in the backyard butting heads with a goat, you know, just kind of for practice. So when I'd walk into a room where an enemy was, I would actually adjust a posture that would allow me to strike with my forehead.
You're leading us into our next set of questions, where actually you're talking about makeup, where Sean Penn once said that in order to get into a character, all he needs is a good haircut. Do you feel like the makeup in Star Trek helps you determine who they are? And you kind of answered that already, but did you ever dread the makeup? Like, when you got that phone call from the producers of Star Trek, were you ever hoping that you would be a human so you wouldn't have to spend hours in the makeup trailer?
Oh, no. I was looking forward to it. The Klingon, you know, Christopher Lloyd, that first one, he had just done that great Klingon in the movie. And I was dying to do it. I was, you know, my dad and I were kind of original Star Trek fans, and I thought, this would be a really fun thing for me to do. It's very much a part of the development of a character when you play one that's so loaded. I mean, I have 4.5 hours on average. One of them was 6.5 hours. Watch each layer be put on in that chair.
Wow.
And each one, I'm trying to make it mean something, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is. But I did say something my first episode ever. I remember my kids coming in who were very small and screaming when they saw me as a Klingon. But I said something on the set. I said to the director, you know, I'm going to try to let the makeup do the acting.
Oh.
And I'll be damned if when I was doing Enterprise, I didn't hear a director say, try to let the makeup do the acting. So somehow they picked that up and used it some 20 years ago after, you know. I felt pretty good about that.
Yeah, that's a good philosophy when there is such a makeup intensive alien in the main characters' faces. Now, do you remember, just by complete chance, which one took 6.5 hours?
The Cretacean in Enterprise. There were two episodes. And the first time I did it, it was 6.5 hours in the makeup chair. I think I got there at 3:30 or 4 in the morning, something like that. Just getting finished with the makeup and get a knock on the, you know, and I'm getting into this character. He's got beads everywhere. All I can think is, I'm so pretty. I'm so pretty because of beautiful, you know, purple face, and I think they were yellow eyes or something. I'm not sure. I had to wear these contacts, but 6.5 hours, knock on the door. Vaughn, can we talk to you for a minute? We're sorry, but we're not going to get to you today.
Oh, no.
It's not you. You know, we're just having technical problems. And so, you know, it had another hour and a half to take it off, or 2 hours. So I got like a half an hour overtime without even getting in front of the camera.
Oh, my gosh. That had to have hurt just a little bit.
Little bit, but it made the money better because
yeah.
I had to come back the next day.
Well, that kind of makes me a little curious about your background. I don't know how you got started in acting. So could you give us a little bit of background on what gave you the acting bug?
I was kind of a little rowdy, you know, for no particular reason in Redlands, California. You know, we all were. It's proven we were tough guys when none of us were, you know, and didn't have a lot of money. And my mother thought I might be going astray. And we were good guys, all of us, but we were looking for minor trouble with toilet paper hair and going to the beach and doing nothing. And she said, I'll give you $10 if you audition for that play that they're doing and get into the acting class. So $10, 1966, a lot of damn money for me. You know, I said, okay. So I did. And I got in that play. I got that. And the first rehearsal I had, a girl who was a senior, I was a junior, she was playing opposite me. And she kissed me in this rehearsal and put her tongue so far down my throat. That kind of did it. So I guess you could say money and women was why I got into it. My drama teacher was a great woman. Really showed some interest and showed me how what you could do with a little discipline. It worked out well. She kind of, you know, she that's how I got into it. And she steered me right.
Wonderful. A good teacher will do that.
Do you remember what your first paid gig was and how you got into that?
I was at the U.S. International University Center for Performing Arts in San Diego in 1970. And they did a summer children's theater, for which I got $20 a week and room and board at the dormitory. I think that was my first gig. And then I was drafted out of that. In my third year, I was drafted out of that university on a full scholarship and sent to Vietnam and got out of the infantry and into entertainment. So that might be my second paid gig. Third was a little theater in Kansas. Again, room and board and $20 a week. And I met my wife there of 41 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
We have now been together 41 years, and it has been the best 5 years of my life. I can't tell you. I can't tell you. I'm just kidding.
Now, you've as you've mentioned, you've been working as an actor since the 70s, and you've done so many things, from soap operas to movies to great, you know, dramas on TV. Now, you know, like so many people, so many actors, they try and they don't get into it and they fail, or they try and succeed and then fizzle out. You know, what do you think has been your key to success for being a long time working actor?
Strength, passion, and vulnerability, both in the character and in life, really. I mean, strength, passion, and vulnerability. You know what I mean?
I like that.
Yeah, I do too. I like that a lot. That's a key word that a lot of people don't use, so that intrigues me. What particularly about vulnerability is it that you tap into both in your life and in the characters?
Well, compassion for someone else. You hurt for people you might have hurt is one big thing. You understand that each of these characters has a right to live.
When we asked you, you know, like what were some of your favorite Star Trek roles, the two of the top three that you talked about were Voyager episodes. And as you know, we're a Voyager podcast. Was there something special about the Voyager set? Was there something about the crew, the cast that you enjoyed the most? Or was it purely the characters that they created that interest you?
Well, I started feeling comfortable in Voyager because I think I did like, was it six characters or something in Voyager? And I started feeling like part of the family there. And I had known Kate,
again,
from the theater. Our kids used to play together when they were toddlers on occasion,
nice.
You know.
And that's cool.
Kate and I worked together in the taper. We did the Marte Performed Repertory Theater for a short while.
Okay.
And Robert Beltran and I had done Macbeth in the La Jolla Playhouse. Yeah, I knew a lot of people there and got to know the others. And it just kind of became a family for me in that show. Being the guest character of the week, you kind of carry the story in a way.
Playing all these one-off characters in Star Trek, was it terribly different for you when you played Admiral Forrest in Enterprise?
Yeah, it was different because I was a human and it was 5 minutes in the makeup chair, you know. But he had some pretty good roles too. The pilot was nice. It wasn't that I carried the story, that was for Scott, you know.
Sure.
And then we did one called First Flight that was, he was very much a part of, and a couple of others. So in a way, I just got the benefit of a bunch of nice little scenes, a bunch of nice little speeches with Scott, and two or three really good pieces with Admiral Forrest. So it was just like we had the cake, but then a lot of icing. Mostly icing and then one or two real good pieces of cake.
Now, did you have any more input with Admiral Forrest because he was a recurring character, or was it more the same as you would with being just a one-off alien of the week? You get the script, you learn your lines, and you go.
Yeah. You know, I find that I had leeway in everything but the dialogue, unless I could prove that there needed to be a change. But they were always very gracious in deferring to the actor, or at least to me. If I had a question that I couldn't figure out, I would ask it. And other than that, they pretty much let me have some leeway. They would ask me questions that I wouldn't expect to be answered, asked to answer. In a cave as a Klingon, doing some kind of work, the guy say, okay, well, what kind of work would you be doing? Well, shouldn't that be like, well, all right, so I'd be looking in this machine because it's cool. I don't know what I'm looking at, but probably sparkly stars or something, and trying to configure meaning out of it. And then he said, perfect, we'll put the camera right through the back of it. It's like, oh, God, that's <You know? laughs> So there was a lot of that.
Well, I want to bring up one thing that you brought up a while back was that you and your dad watched Star Trek. So were you a lifelong fan of Star Trek? And then did that have anything to do with you pursuing roles for Star Trek? Or was it just as an actor, you audition for everything you possibly can? Or, you know, was there a specific interest like, oh, well, I love Star Trek. And then how was it just simply being several characters on Star Trek, leaving a legacy?
What was it, 66 Star Trek started and went for 3 years, and my brother was real into sci-fi, and my dad, of course, loved it too, and so I watched it then when they watched it, but I just really gotten into theater, and I was most of the time at rehearsals, but I watched it, and then when I was going to school, I'd come home at midnight later after Vietnam and after another school, and into another school, after rehearsals at midnight, there was a double bill. It was Star Trek and then Twilight Zone. And how do you wind down better than that? So all of the originals, you know. So I was that much of a fan, and my dad remained a fan throughout the years. And in fact, I went to live with him for a while at the end of his life, and we'd be in the hospital, and he would say to everybody who came in, this is funny. He's a Star Trek actor, you know, everybody that walked in, which is pretty fun. He was pretty proud of it.
Yeah, that's pretty.
He was a roofer his whole life and worked very hard. It showed in his body afterwards. He did a lot of pain, but really a lover of sci-fi. And we watched it a lot together.
That's cool.
I think I forgot to mention that Alisa Goodman, who was a friend of a guy that wrote a version of Dracula that I did in a dinner theater in Albuquerque, New Mexico, had me in for the first audition for Star Trek. And, you know, she was the one that kind of got that going, which, by the way, did change my life. I mean, I've been to 20 different, 22 now. I just got back from Jamaica and Haiti and Katsumo, where I've been before. But I don't know, like 22, 25 countries related to Star Trek events, you know?
That is incredible.
I wouldn't have that going at all had I not done these Star Treks.
Yeah, well, I think that's a testament to just how life-changing Star Trek is for a lot of us.
Yeah,
it really is.
I think it must be the most popular show in the world because they're everywhere. You don't see like hardcore Friends.
There's not Friends conventions, at least as far as I'm aware.
It doesn't matter where you go. I mean, I got off the boat in Budapest on a cruise from Nuremberg to Budapest, and they were meeting me in my uniform.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That totally is.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Vaughn, thank you so much for your time, and thank you so much for sharing all of this history and all these stories with us. Before we close up shop, is there anything else that you'd like to promote? Any gigs that you're doing? Anything at all that you'd like to promote? Feel free. Like, and how the fans might be able to contact you with a website or Facebook or Twitter?
There's a Enterprise Blues Band Facebook page, and I'm on Facebook. Of course, I rarely look at it. So if you see me something one day, I might see it. The Enterprise Blues Band is playing at the Altadena Backstage Coffee Gallery on Lake Avenue. There's only about 100 seats or so, but the Enterprise Blues Band is playing there. And we've got ringers. We've got fiddlers and bass players and all that, so it's going to be good fun. And that Star Trek cruise in 2017. And then in 2016, I think the Rat Pack is doing six cities, but you just got to look at Creation Entertainment.
Fantastic.
Very cool. Well, thank you again, Vaughn, for your time.
Thank you, guys. You guys were great. How
so
nice
are
to
you.
Talk to you, and thank you for letting me just go on.
Oh, no, it was our pleasure. Yes, thank you so much for your time, and I'm sure our fans are getting a kick out of getting to a behind-the-scenes look at your life and theory of acting.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, interviewing Vaughn Armstrong is not the only thing that's happening on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what the other podcasts are doing because they didn't interview Vaughn Armstrong.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Usually Mike and I are like,
what's going on? Our heads are just spinning like, what? I don't understand what's going on, you know? And, like, you know, when I listen to that, I'm like, are we, like, you know, bad?
The orb.
He requested, you know, a Bajoran officer to serve with him
yeah.
on purpose, you know. He understands. You make this their own. We can't.
I'm glad he did it on purpose. I could see him like accidentally requesting a Bajoran officer. Oh man, I checked the wrong box on the form. Damn.
The ready room.
Actually, I think at this point, Vulcan Love Slave was probably just a short story, right? It hadn't been turned into a full-blown
That's right. It's not a full-blown novel at that point. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just fanfic. It's just fanfic.
Yeah, just fanfic. Right.
Just on the internet. People started writing after first contact there in Montana.
To the journey! It's very much the genesis of Seven of Nine.
Genesis alone is not. Sorry.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
So we're closing in on the World Series is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, the Sox were able to win the World Series in, you know, 12 games. So we're no White Sox, but we're like the Cubs or something. Oh, no, wait. They didn't win the World Series. Never mind.
The 602 Club.
To speak back to the lightsaber overall, I mean, it was practical reasons that they switched it to green, but I've always loved the fact that Luke had that green saber, even when I was a kid. Like, it's really cool. It's an immediate visual signal, you know, even outside of the outfit that he's wearing, that he's a different kind of person than even we saw in the previous film. And I really like that.
Literary Treks.
The pinnacle of episodes that we've ever done on that was probably when we had Tristan from To the Journey on to talk about some Voyager comics. And... we ended up, that show was named Tuvok's remedial school for badasses or something of that nature. So, I mean, yeah, these old comics can just be very, very fun.
Meta Treks.
I looked it up, and ornare is the Latin word for to adorn.
That's fascinating.
So I looked up breca, and it turns out the same spelling, B-R-E-K-K-A, is Old Norse for slope or hillside.
And that, listeners, is something you will only get right here on Metatreks.
Better living through etymology.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available on any kind of platform you can possibly desire to get all of our podcasts, all 20 plus of them. None of them are possible without the help of the people who support us on Patreon. So I highly encourage you to go to patreon.com/trekfm and check this out. We've got several different subscription levels for you. And with each different level, you have different perks. There's cool stuff for you, like the Patrons Roundtable, where you can actually join in on a discussion. There's wallpapers, there's ringtones, early releases, you name it. So take a look there if you haven't already, see what's in it for you, and consider becoming a subscriber. We especially want to thank Aaron Harvey, Jamie Deuce, Kenneth Tripp, and Bruce Lish for being associate producers on To the Journey. We thank them for supporting To the Journey especially, but the network at large. Now, next week, what we're doing is a surprise!
You know, it worked for us a couple of weeks ago, and I think it'll work again. I love doing surprise episodes because I love to keep people on their toes, but you'll have to tune in next week to find out.
That's right. So until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey. To the Journey!